Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome back. Good to have you with us. On our way to this conversation, I'll remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. Mortgage late? Don't wait. If you're struggling with your mortgage, the state of Maryland is offering housing counseling and legal assistance. Maryland's HOPE program can even help you understand the state's mediation law and the Attorney General's National Foreclosure Settlement. Don't wait. Get help today. More information at mdhope.org or at 877-462-7555. I saw an article in the New York Times. I was reading about this, these hacking conventions that took place, and that one of the things that happened there was that a Prius was crashed by people remotely using their computers. That really intrigued me. And then I also read Edward Erickson's article in the Baltimore City paper, the City That Hacks, about all the hacking and hackers in this world in our community that few of us know is here. So in our studio is Edward Erickson, staff writer for the Baltimore City paper, who, as I said, wrote the article, The City That Hacks, A Guide to Baltimore's Emerging Maker Culture. Dr. Rick Forno is with us, director of the University of Maryland Baltimore County's Graduate Cybersecurity Program, assistant director of UMBC's Center for Cybersecurity, and junior affiliate scholar at the Stanford Law School's Center for Internet and Security, and Stephen Bono, who is CEO and president of the Independent Security Evaluators, a Baltimore-based cybersecurity firm. And Rick, Edward, Stephen, good to have you all in the studio.
Well, it's good to be here.
And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us at steinershow at gmail.com. Tweet us at Mark Steiner, log on our Facebook page. Unless we get hacked and you can't get through, then that's life. 410-319-8888 is the number to join us here. So let me just start. And let me start with you, Ed, just to talk about this definition. A lot of people hear the word hacker and don't know what we're talking about. They think it's all, you know, somebody in the garage blowing up our computer systems and sending us spam. What is the definition of hacker? Let's start with that.
No, I think you got it right. That's about right. All these guys would say that. Well, no, it's much broader now. What I was surprised to see, and I'm probably very late to this party, all the people who have been doing this for 3 or 4 years around town, is that they do computer stuff. And they do stuff with hardware on their computers, and they make new programs on their computers. And, you know, was making things so that he could control the air conditioner in his apartment because he doesn't have a thermostat in there, and so he just built this thing so he could do it from his phone, and so that's all happening. But in a broader sense, there's also people. I mean, at the newest one, the Foundry, they're doing welding classes. And I'm like, well, I can get with that. That's so it's the whole broad spectrum from, you know, building things out of wood and metal to, you know, making a computer brain for that thing that you built and then, you know, setting it loose on the city and you know, blowing stuff up and taking over the world. That's pretty much what's happening.
But we have terms like hacker and cracker, and it gets very confusing for most people who are not in this world about what all these things mean, because obviously all of hacking is not illegal. All of hacking is not something that undermines.
So you're taking something and you're repurposing it. You're saying, this is a good thing, but I wanted to do this other thing. How can I do that? Oh, I did it. And then, you know, and then showing it to your friends.
So in your world, how does that work? Stephen Bone, let me start with you.
So as Ed said, it's about taking something and, you know, doing something new and innovative with it. And in the cybersecurity world, that sort of bleeds into a nefarious area where you're taking something that could be good and finding some way to do something bad with it. Or here is a security system. How can I get around that security system? And it's innovation. It's trying something new, but it's usually for ill instead of good.
And so when these people have these DEF CON and Black Hat conventions, people see that in the paper. I think people are also not clear what those things mean. And why they're so different?
Well, the conferences are security related. So the vast majority.
Both?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
So many or most, if not all, of the presentations and sessions are focused on emerging threats and vulnerabilities and exploits that actually will cause bad things to happen. Showing vulnerabilities in systems, whether it's your toaster, your refrigerator, your Prius, or a network or a telephone system. So those are hacking conferences. But I do agree with what's been said earlier that hacking is not just a nefarious action, although it has that connotation. It really is a state of mind. You see something and you either want to improve it or customize it for your own purposes, or finds a way to do something that fits a need that is currently unfulfilled.
So that in some senses it's the there's a joy in figuring out how to undermine the system, mm-hmm. right?
Even definitely.
Even if you have no nefarious plans. You don't want to take it over. Sure. You don't want to steal money from the bank. You don't want to crash a car. It's just the idea of being able to get in there and do it.
Beating the system.
Yes. So, which is probably one of the reasons why at the Black Hat Convention, if I have it right, that the head of the NSA came to speak. The DEF CON said, we don't want NSA here. You can't come to our conference.
Right.
But the Black Hat said, come in. First of all, why Black Hat? I mean, we're not talking about Orthodox Jews, so I'm not sure what Black Hat means. We'll figure that out in a minute as well. So,
what? Well, if you're the director of NSA or you're the White House cybersecurity advisor to the president, you want to have access to the best and brightest minds in the security world, many of whom view that week in Las Vegas for Black Hat and DEF CON as sort of the crowning moment in the security year. So you want to reach that audience, that's the place to do it. You have a great platform. You've got thousands of people in attendance, a lot of publicity, and you can get your message out. In this case, General Alexander had a very challenging time this year, given recent news events. But that's sort of the you mentioned Black Hats, the mecca of cybersecurity for the hacking world.
And DEF CON is the more anti-establishment group that
yes.
meets, right?
Yeah.
Black Hat's more corporate, usually professional security guys like that, and you get a lot of hobbyists and more anti-establishment mentality at DEF CON.
Anonymous might show up at DEF CON,
right?
Whoever that is,
right?
but I think this is given the increased technologization, digitization of our society. I mean, everything from our front door locks to literally the cars that we drive, everything we use. This is a very serious issue. I've been joking a minute ago, but it really is a very serious issue in terms of what can happen to us, and what and because people, I think, are probably more vulnerable in this regard than we realize. You think that's true?
Yes, definitely. I mean, every time we add this digital component to an existing technology, it's going to get hacked. as soon as you put a computer in a car, that computer is going to get hacked. It doesn't surprise me anymore that that happens, but to everyone else who doesn't realize, oh, there's a computer in my car, it is pretty surprising to them. And, you know, now mobile phones have everything that a phone shouldn't have on them, which makes them a much broader attack surface, and you have all of your life on that phone. These sorts of things, I mean, 10 years ago, that wasn't an issue. Now it's a huge issue. Right now, not all cars are automated. In 10 years, if that's the case, this could be an issue just as dangerous as not just to your personal information, but to your physical well-being if those cars can be driven.
But, Steve, I want to ask you this. To hack that Prius, they had to take the dashboard pretty much all the way apart, right? And then they had to jack into it.
Right.
And they didn't crash the Prius, did they? I think they were in the Prius when they took control of it. So they made sure that the guy at the wheel couldn't control where it was going. But they didn't crash it into a ball of flames because – they were inside the car.
Right.
So it's to me, it's like we're not quite at the space where, you know, everybody needs to get super paranoid. Or maybe we are. You know a lot more about this than I do.
I definitely don't think people need to be super paranoid about it. As if the cars themselves end up being outfitted with cellular connectivity or other Wi-Fi connectivity, these types of attacks may become more probable.
Well, can you get through the OnStar to the steer-by-wire?
I don't know precisely, but if there are other components that can be accessed wirelessly, you could potentially exploit them, install malicious code on those vehicles, and then compromise the computer.
Rick?
I don't know of any study that's done.
I'm sorry.
I think the bigger question is the idea of the Internet of Things. Everything is becoming connected to the Internet or networked to other devices. Mm-hmm. And I fear, said this for years, that we accept and embrace a lot of these new technologies into our lives and become dependent on them before we really understand the risks involved to ourselves or information.
Give me an example of what you're talking about.
Does your refrigerator need to be on the Internet to tell you that your milk is going bad? I don't think so.
I'm with you on that.
Do you really need to have your air conditioning thermostat controlled through your cable company via your smartphone? Maybe yes, but do you know that exposure presents possible opportunities for a bad guy to come in and turn up your heat in the middle of summertime while you're not home.
Let's go on to that, because BGE has a program where they literally can do this. They can turn it down. Of course, they do the opposite, right?
Right.
And they pay us a little bit to allow them to do that. But now they're going to put the smart meters on there, and they're going to have to make, they're going to make us pay to not have the smart meters on. I'm just wondering, like, so BGE, are they hackable? Can they do what you just said? Can somebody do that through their system already? Because I have this in my house. I mean,
I don't know specifically. I wouldn't rule it out. My basic rule of thumb is that if something's connected to a public network in any way, shape, or form, the opportunity is there for bad things to happen.
So there are people who like to hack and will do these things. Like, that you get the spam mail all the time. Mm-hmm. That if you open up the link on somebody, they have the ability now to go and send an email being sent by somebody who you know well. You think it's cool, unless you're really checking it very carefully. You click on, and then whatever that is that's in that virus, whatever else is coming, or take the information out that they want from you, can be done. I mean, that's the part that I think that people that's what we know more about more than anything else. So, but some of this stuff is done maliciously. Some of it's done to take your information, banking information, whatever else. Some is done because people just want to have the power to turn things around in people's lives. So it's both.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, we deal with threats of all sorts, from advanced persistent threats, foreign governments, foreign terrorist organizations, down to just a kid looking to have fun who will spend a weekend hacking a public website or a public infrastructure just for his own notoriety.
So just what pops in my mind when you said that. So when Snowden went to China, went to Hong Kong, and whether you agree with Snowden did or not, it's not the question here. When Snowden went to Hong Kong and the Chinese said, we're going to look inside what you have here, and they found out that the United States was spying on their whatever system they were spying on digitally, what did that mean?
First off, it shouldn't have come to a surprise that
right, exactly.
Not like they didn't know that already. Right. Not like they're doing the same, not doing the same thing to us.
They are, clearly.
And the New York Times.
Right.
Right.
What does it mean for the U.S.-China relationship? Or?
No, it's just, what does it mean? So it wasn't a shock, but I mean, the idea that, I guess I'm not saying this clearly. What I'm really curious about, and see what our listeners think at 410-319-8888, is when we look at the cyber wars taking place around the globe between countries, that it seems to be a growing sector of where the confrontations around the globe are going to begin to take place. Not necessarily guns firing, but in the cyber definition of war. So where is that taking us, I guess, what I'm asking? What do you think is taking us?
Well, I think it means we have to be vigilant as individuals, as users of this technology that may be vulnerable. We have to be vigilant as a nation and understand how we're building our society and our infrastructure to ensure that we don't present opportunities, targets of opportunities for a bad guy to cause mischief here at home. So really, it's a multi-leveled defense, starting with the individual, going all the way up through the nation.
What would you add to that, Steve?
I would say that we have various levels, from the individual all the way up through your large enterprise, for who security is a big issue, and foreign threats attack every level of that. And if their target is enterprise, they may still target individual. And so the individual has. It can be the weakest link in that chain, or it could be any one of those medium-sized companies in between who facilitate, who write software for the enterprise or who write software for the individual. And so if you have a large organization with a small company who has built one entryway into that organization, that small company may be the victim of a cyber attack from foreign state, so that they can then get into the larger, more secure organization.
I think what it means is what you just alluded to, Mark, is that ordinary people in the country are waking up to something that people in the security world, that your other two guests have known for, two, maybe three decades, is that this isn't a new thing. This is something that they've been living with for a very long time. And it's only now, in the last couple of years, when you hear about like the Stuxnet thing. That was a thing it took out the Iranian nuclear program for a minute. Because they put this little, worm in their thing, and made their centrifuges spin too fast, and it blew them up. That sort of thing never came out before, and now it's starting to, for whatever reason, we're getting more public awareness of this, and then everybody's sort of like, oh my God, we're really you know, really that, you know, vulnerable. But there's no way to really turn back the clock either.
It's here.
Right, because your bank account is now, you know, online. I mean, right? So it's like that's there. You know, all your medical records, you know,
online.
All that stuff is being used. And it's always been – and my thing is this has always been looked at privately as well. These databases have been built by, you know, in the medical world, insurance companies spend a lot of time and money looking at that stuff because that's their business. And, you know, certainly Google, you know, what's their business? Is it just to help you find whatever you're finding online? No. No, it's to learn all about you so that they can target their ads and all that stuff. So these things are ubiquitous now. And we're now starting to have a broader conversation that non-experts can join. And I think it's cramping the style of a lot of people who have known this for so long because it's like, oh, wait a minute. I gotta tell you this because you don't know
this. Is it cramping your style?
It's not cramping my style, but I would certainly say it's now time for folks who to say, we told you so. We've warned against these sort of issues of privacy, security, Stuxnet, a virus taking out physical equipment for at least the past 15 or 20 years. So for us, it's not new. But I and I'm sure others are very happy to see the public debate returning with somewhat of a vengeance, and there's more interest in addressing these issues publicly.
So there are little things here. I think people hear these words. I'm not sure what they mean. And we're just kind of touching the surface. I look forward to kind of longer, more in-depth conversations about this with you all and others in the coming months. But when people read about DDoS.
That's a distributed denial of service attack. What that means is there's what's known as botnets out there, which are networks of interconnected compromised machines, some of them the millions of nodes large. And those distributed networks can be organized to launch targeted attacks against one particular organization or one particular site. So then you end up with millions of computers performing a single attack, which allows, if it were password guessing attacks, it becomes much easier to guess passwords. Or if it's just to take down a website and then deny service to that website.
So and who, I mean, I know part of your job is to help corporations and businesses, universities combat that, but who's doing the attacks?
Everybody, all sorts of organizations. You can purchase access to these botnets and perform your own attacks or
– Purchase?
Yeah.
Absolutely. And it's not that expensive. A lot of these attacks come out of Eastern Europe where you see and I won't say they're publicly available – ads, but you can rent or lease a 100,000 node botnet, 100,000 machines that have been exploited to do your bidding for 24 hours. You know, send your $500 payment to so-and-so, and you have access for 24 hours.
Is that right? $500 for 100,000?
Whatever,
and is there a guarantee on that? Because I want to shut those guys down. If they
whatever
don't
the amount is, but a lot of these attacks we see come from Eastern Europe.
And is it legal where it's happening from or no?
Probably not, but enforcement's probably lax.
So we're also saying to talk a bit about what the if I'm saying this correctly, femtocells. What's the debate over that? That people read about in the Times, other places. What does that mean?
So a femtocell, I believe, is commodity hardware that can be used to intercept cell phone communications. So actually, at DEF CON a few years ago, some people installed a number of femtocells that intercepted a lot of the wireless communications that were
from the conference.
At the conference, and it's fun stuff like that happens.
But it was all in
fun stuff like that.
Yes. No, that type of mischief happens at hacker conferences of sorts.
But what does it mean for those of us who have smartphones, iPhones? What does that mean?
Well, I mean, if you have a smartphone and you have a femtocell at home or some kind of network repeater to boost your signal in the large house, that, again, presents an opportunity for a bad guy to come in and maybe either hijack your signal or intercept your signals.
In subways, there's no radio signal to the outer cellular towers, and
right.
So these cells exist down there to repeat and forward the traffic.
I mean, there's all kinds of pieces of this I think that we don't yet have a handle on, and your piece was making me realize how, in some ways, in Baltimore and in Maryland, and specifically, we're at the center of a lot of this, Oh, yeah. Because of universities, UMBC, Hopkins, the Morgan NSA. Engineering Program, NSA.
Yeah.
It's all
yeah,
here.
And all the private contractors. Yeah. There's a lot of people who know a lot more than anybody around this table, I'm sure.
Perhaps. But we really don't know what these guys know, do we?
We're not at liberty to say.
They're an unknown unknown.
So I am curious what you think, just in terms of where we are going as a society. I mean, what you two are working on the cutting edge of is also the cutting edge of where new laws are going to have to be, where security has to be. I mean, it really is changing the nature of how we view the entire society and what the next generation can face, is going to face.
Mm-hmm. I think every couple of years, the security landscape changes drastically. New technology is introduced. Businesses begin to understand different concepts related to security. When we started ISE 8 years ago, most people didn't even know they needed a security assessment. Nowadays, it's not convincing them that they need one, but convincing them what kind they need, which is definitely a step up from thinking, oh, well, we're secure because nobody tried to hack us yet. But it's those the way we all do business it in security changes so rapidly, and the techniques change, and so people need to be re-educated constantly.
And so, so how's that playing? So, very quickly, unless comments we have left, the whole kind of graduate cybersecurity program that you run, what does that mean for us?
Well, it means that we're looking at this changing landscape, and one of our driving forces is recognizing that dynamic, that things are changing every couple of years. And more broadly, we have to recognize that in many cases, this is a generational change. And the folks that are charged presently with developing laws, regulations, and policies for cybersecurity didn't necessarily grow up with the technology. So they may not fully understand it or appreciate it the way the next generation does, the one behind that. So in educating people about cybersecurity, we address the dynamic of the discipline. It changes so quickly. But in producing folks to work in this epicenter of cybersecurity, we also give them the skills to be able to apply what they learned in cybersecurity to work well with others and be part of a larger team, hopefully doing good for their company or for the country.
We have about a minute left. You want to have a
question? It's more, I think, than a generational thing, too, which is why these hacker spaces, I think, can play a real role. You know, everybody's invited to learn at least the basics about the stuff that's already in your life. And if you want to pry something apart and do something to it, that's great. That's wonderful. And you can totally learn that. But if you take nothing else away from a visit to any of these places, which you can go for, you can go for free to, it's that, yeah, this stuff is here. And, oh, now I understand what it is, at least on the most basic level. And that can help a lot.
Absolutely.
Edward Erickson has written the article, The City That Hacks, A Guide to the Baltimore's Emerging Maker Culture, in this week's City Paper. Dr. Rick Forno joins us, Director of University of Baltimore County's Graduate Cybersecurity Program, Assistant Director of UMBC's Center for Cybersecurity. Stephen Bono is CEO and President of the Independent Security Evaluators, a Baltimore-based cybersecurity firm. Good to have all three of you with us. We'll come back to this.
Thank you.
More intense, a little bit longer. Good to have you on the studio. Great. Thank you so
good
much.
Thanks a lot.
Good beginning here. Remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Mark Overy and Stephanie Mavronis. We're engineered by Andre Melton. Our interns are Daniel Dupree, Alexander Rudy, and Sinead Hawkins. You can podcast this show, find information about our guests and the work they do, articles they've written, by visiting our, I hope, secure website at steinershow.org. You can also download and podcast all of our work on iTunes. And for Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.